Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas with The Grapevine at SaverLife.com, and happy Valentine's Day. It is a bit of sunshine to brighten up Valentine's Day. Not sure it's going to warm it up very much, but to brighten it up, there are quite a few wineries that are doing special tastings today. There are really no big wine trail events as there usually are around Valentine's Day. The chocolate and wine and things because of the pandemic, but they will be back in this, the chocolate and wine, I would venture, in 2022. There may be some big wine trail events still to come later in 2021. I would guess that Deck the Halls will be return because you have to assume by November, at least probably... Hopefully several months before that, big events like that will be able to resume. I hope you're enjoying some Finger Lakes wine, perhaps some New York State wine. Maybe Arrowhead Spring Vineyards from Western New York has some gorgeous red wines. That's really what they feature. They have some really good white wines too, but they have some outstanding reds. And you can do curbside pickup. You can have them ship them to you. And they have a beautiful new tasting room. And they just opened it just before the pandemic. It's got to be easily the largest tasting room in the wineries in the U.S. side of the Niagara River in Western New York. I haven't been to visit the wineries down near, closer to Lake Erie, south of Buffalo, southwest of Buffalo, in a long time. So there may be some newer and bigger tasting rooms there. But Arrowhead Spring Vineyards has a really gorgeous one that's brand new. There was a note Bob Medill posted on Facebook from Wine Business Monthly, their February issue this year, and it lists New York as number five in terms of the total number of wineries. Now we have been eclipsed by Texas, which I was surprised. I haven't been following this, so I should have seen the increases in Texas wineries. But there are quite a few states that are surprisingly close to us in number of wineries. Pennsylvania is not that far away in terms of total number of wineries. And so right now they listed bonded and virtual wineries. Virtual, I assume, being ones that perhaps don't have tasting rooms, they have their brands, they perhaps distribute them or sell them through other tasting rooms, but they don't have their own tasting room. And so New York State has 403 bonded wineries, 28 virtual wineries. And in the category of virtual, I guess, put Osmote Winery and there's several... Berry Family Vineyards, they closed their tasting room in Burdett, but Ian Berry is still making wine, although he's a winemaker. A Cobblestone now, and there's a bunch of others. Several of them have now opened tasting rooms. Randy Agnes from Agnes Wine Cellars has been working on a tasting room, and several others. So, again, 431 total wineries, according to Wine Business Monthly February issue. And Texas has 466, so they are 35 ahead of us. And Washington has 843. Oregon has 844, and partly because... Oregon has an extraordinary number of virtual wineries. I'm not sure what's driving this, actually. Maybe Wine Business Monthly will write about this. but they have organized 550 wineries that are bonded and almost 300 virtual wineries. California also has a substantial number of virtual wineries. And, you know, that's so a third roughly of the Oregon and California wineries are virtual. Washington, it's like 5%, and New York, it's like 5%. So I don't know what that story, why that is. But in the total number of wineries, I thought Washington's been ahead of Oregon, so perhaps they just eclipse them by one now. California has 4,745 wineries total, and I actually thought that was higher, but I guess not. Maybe I'm remembering back, there were something like 8,000 or 9,000 wineries in the United States, and California had about half of them. So, I guess that makes sense. But you know, following New York State, there's Pennsylvania, which is 353 total, Virginia 310, Ohio 302, and again, those are kind of in the ballpark with New York's 431, especially if someone decides to, some of these states, those wineries start to ramp up the number of virtual wineries like Oregon and California have. I got to do some research on that, why Oregon and California have so many virtual wineries. It seems odd. But again, Wine Business Monthly, it's their tally, and you know, in New York State, breweries are growing faster than wineries. Distilleries are too, I think. But we are still New York, and the Finger Lakes in particular, are still the best known wine region east of the Rockies, and that's worth a lot. And these numbers are a reminder that we can't sit on our laurels and think that's always going to be that way. There are states that are spending a lot of money. I would guess that Michigan might be just behind Ohio. The post that he sent out didn't have the entire list. It just had these top eight states. So Michigan's probably close behind, and some of these states are spending quite a bit of money to promote their wineries as a business, as an industry. And New York State, they would all love to catch up and pass New York State in number of wineries, but especially in notoriety. And for now, the Finger Lakes in particular is the clear number one east of the Rockies, but that may not always be that way. There's a lot of investment going in these other states. North Carolina is probably close behind Ohio, along with Michigan. Lots of other states have hundreds of wineries, not just a couple, but hundreds. Oh, kind of a fun list to look at, Wine Business Monthly. And the Edible Finger Lakes posted a really cool article. You should look this up. EdibleFingerLakes.com on seven couples behind the Finger Lakes food shed's success, and some nice photos of them, as well as a little bit of write-ups about them. Peter and Ashley, the owners, and Peter's a winemaker from Weiss Vineyards. Some of the background about Peter: he was hired by Willie Frank to work at Dr. Constantine Frank after getting his winemaking degree in Germany, and they have some beautiful wines located just on the east side of Keuka Lake. Also, Lisa and Justin from Hazelnut Kitchen, one of the really phenomenal restaurants in the Finger Lakes in Trumansburg, which is a tiny place. Ezra and Autumn from Eve's Cidery. This is really one of the, I think, nationwide leaders in launching the cider, hard cider business a couple of decades ago. Also, Lisa and Morten Hallgren from Ravine's Wine Cellars. Morten, by the way, also hired by Willie who hired him and was one of the winemaking team, member of the team at Dr. Frank for a number of years. And of course, now they have two tasting rooms, one on Seneca Lake, one on Cuca Lake. And it says in the Edible Finger Lakes article, 130 acres of vineyards. And then Grey Rock Farm CSA, Matt and Layla. This is not one I'm familiar with. It's in Cazenovia. So kind of fun to read about them. They also not only do vegetables, but also 100% grass-fed Swiss cows, pork, and beef. Kelby and Julia, they are winemakers at two different wineries. Kelby James Russell, the winemaker at Red Newt Cellars, and Julia Hoyle, the winemaker at Hosmer Winery. Article refers to them as a winemaking super couple, both making really outstanding wines. And if you haven't had any Red Newt or Hosmer wines recently, you need to go in search of those. Also, Shannon and Paul Brock from Silver Thread Winery, they purchased this quite a few years ago and kept the name of the winery. And really have done an amazing job producing Rieslings. The winery is powered 100% by solar panels since 2015. So those are the seven couples that were highlighted in Edible Finger Lakes. A bunch of them, of course, related to wineries and perhaps wineries you haven't heard of, and maybe you haven't heard of Eve's Cidery. Believe was the first one that I know of in New York State. Bellwether followed her, I believe, and then there were really virtually no more hard cider producers for 10 or maybe 15 years. It was a long time. It was just those two, as far as I'm aware. And then in the last 10 years, a whole lot of other cideries have popped up around New York State, around New England. And that is great news for apple farmers. As these cideries grow, their demand for apples is growing. And one of them, at least, Embark, and also Rootstock, are... I'm not sure about Rootstock. Embark is part of Lagener Farms, which is a long-time big producer of apples. And so, for a long time, all these apples that were grown in this fruit belt on the southern edge of Lake Ontario, a lot of those went into apple juice, and Mott's purchased them. China started exporting really cheap apples and really cheap juice, and the apple farmers just got hammered by the prices. But this hasn't been an easy transition for the apple growers, because the apples that you use for hard cider generally are not the same as the ones that you make into juice or you sell as eating apples. The hard cider apples tend to be high in tannins and pretty much inedible. I suppose there's a few people out there that maybe really love to eat them, but very few, I think. They are commonly referred to as spitters, as I recall. So the apple farmers have had to transition orchards, and it takes time and money. But the hard cider business is continuing to grow, and kind of a cool category history-wise, because a huge amount of hard cider was made in this area back in the 1800s, pre-prohibition. And it's only been in the last decade that it's really started to return. So it's hard ciders. If you haven't had any, you should go in search of some. It's pretty widely available now. And you know, there are a lot of great brands, Blue Toad, Embark, Rootstock, Steampunk Hard Cider, which is from Leonard Oaks Farms, which is Medina, and a bunch of others. And it's low alcohol. It's more like beer in terms of alcohol, but very refreshing. And also varies a lot in terms of sweetness. There's some that are pretty sweet. There's some that are completely dry. There's some that are bubbly. There's some that are fortified. Some are done in oak. And probably the best, well, two places to go to learn about hard cider and taste some, Muller's Cider House, which is on Culver Road, not far from East Avenue Wegmans, and very close to Full Moon Vista and the Revelry. Muller's Cider House features a wide range of ciders from around the world, so this is a great place to go if you want to try a hard cider from France or Spain or England, perhaps other parts of the United States, and some local hard ciders. And then Finger Lakes Cider House, one of my favorite places to go to taste ciders, because there's about five cideries that got together to build this near Trumansburg, so west side of Cayuga Lake. And these cideries built one tasting room, and you can try a couple dozen ciders all in one place. So you really get a full range of what's being done with hard cider at the Finger Lakes Cider House. And Bet the Farm Winery is not far away. Taconic Falls, which is gorgeous during the winter, is there. But like with most things, check hours before you go if your mission is to go to the Finger Lakes Cider House or Bet the Farm Winery or you know, any destinations, you want to check their hours. So winter is the quietest time to go and visit tasting rooms in the Finger Lakes and Western New York, especially during the week. So, you know, weekends, there'll be a few more people, but often not many. You know, January, February are the quietest months for tasting rooms. And so if you're trying to avoid crowds, it's an ideal time to go visit. Not all wineries are offering tastings right now. Some, it's just sales. Again, check some websites. And if you want some suggestions on where to go, maybe in addition to a couple places you're targeting, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. We had a bottle of the Brut Rosé from Dr. Constantine Frank for sort of an early brunch for Valentine's Day. And what a stunning light pink color that was. Really, really delicious. Those tiny bubbles from Method Champenoise. Also, the pink color reminded me that I've seen a couple wineries posting that they are releasing their dry rosés from 2020. And we'll see a lot more over the next month. A category that's grown a lot in the Finger Lakes. And makes just fantastic food wine. The color of dry rosé varies tremendously from the palest of pinks to fairly bright pink in some cases. So I would say in general they tend to be pretty light in color, though, which is part of the fun, I think, because they visually fool you. You see the light color and maybe you think, you know, it's not quite as flavorful, just, you know, in spite of all the wines that I've tasted, it's still something that crosses my mind. And yet these dry rosés have outstanding flavor, complex flavors, really, really delicious. And again, fantastic food wines. So if you want to celebrate the season as we get into March and April, pretty much all of these dry rosés will become available by certainly by April, probably partway through March. And you know, a couple years ago, there was a dry rosé tasting for industry, for wine stores and wine writers, etc., at Fox Run Vineyards. And it was, I think, March 4th or something like that. And, you know, dry rosé is often associated with summer, spring, early, you know, warm spring days or summer. It's really good year-round. Delicious. It doesn't need to be consumed soon, but it is associated with warmer weather to some degree. And that industry tasting, I think it was 4 degrees, and below that with wind chill, but I think it was 4 degrees at Fox Run. I have vivid memories of the tasting room being all lit up and the walk from my car to the tasting room was, the snow was so crunchy because it was so cold. It was just incredibly cold that night, which can happen in March. But the sun will be higher in the sky. The snow won't last as long, and March is only a couple weeks away. So again, keep on the lookout for dry rosés. If you find some dry rosés from 2019 or 2018, those are going to be fabulous. It's, again, not a wine that needs to be consumed in a particular period of time. The wines in New York State in general tend to be high in acid. That helps them to hold for, in some cases, many years. So if you find a winery that's maybe selling off some of its earlier stock of dry rosé from an earlier year, I would taste some maybe before you buy it, but I would buy a bunch of it potentially. It is generally a great bargain too. I think dry rosé prices are relatively low. It's good for the wineries. It really is often one of the first wines that they bottle and get right out to the market. And so that's helpful to get income coming in from the 2020 vintage earlier than certainly with the reds and even months earlier than the release of the white wines. So dry rosé, often the first wine released from the from any given vintage. Let me know if you have some really good ones or some feedback. Michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back on Saturday with Gardening Restaurants. Discover the Finger Lakes here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.